out here, we'd be driving in the two-car garage.
Mike Sackett is giving me a tour of his house that he's not actually built yet.
Now we'd be in what I call the mudroom where you take your boots off.
The house he imagines is a rustic three-bedroom A-frame with views of Priest Lake and the rugged landscape that surrounds it.
See, through there you can see all the way to the south end of the lake.
But Chantel and Mike Sackett's 0.63-acre plot is still dirt and gravel, the same as it's been since work came to a halt 4 years ago. And their plans now hinge on the nation's highest court. Not what Chantel imagined the day she purchased a lot in a subdivision for her husband.
Yeah, I thought I was going to surprise him. Boy, did I ever.
In May of 2007, as workers prepared to dig footings for the house, three people visited the Sackett's lot. Two officials from the Environmental Protection Agency and one from the Army Corps of Engineers. They later told the Sackett's the couple was building on a wetland. The Sackett stopped work, and Chantel says she got on the phone with someone from the EPA.
She said, well, it's in the National Wetland Inventory. And I said, okay, what's that? So she said, you can go online and look at it, and here are the coordinates. And the coordinates were not in a wetlands. I said, we're not in a wetlands. It doesn't show it. She goes, well, the wetlands inventory isn't always correct.
The online National Wetlands Inventory, in fact, does show what appears to be the Sackett's lot in a wetland, though not all of it, and not at the exact registered address. Mike Sackett says he hired experts to look at the property, and they determined it wasn't a wetland at all. But let's stop right there for a second. The nine justices of the Supreme Court won't be hearing about soil samples and hydrology. The Sackett's case isn't about whether or not their property is a wetland. Mike and Chantel Sackett say they never had a chance to argue that point. Theirs is a case of due process. Essentially, it comes down to this exchange.
I said, so why would I stop building my house? She said, because we told you to.
That's why what the U.S. Supreme Court decides has implications well beyond the Sackett's half acre. For that, we turn to my colleague Elizabeth Wynn Johnson.
I'm in Washington, D.C., standing outside EPA headquarters, elegant neoclassical buildings that stretch for several city blocks. But I'm not going inside. The agency isn't commenting on Sackett versus EPA. But plenty of others are. Environmental groups want to preserve the EPA's ability to enforce the Clean Water Act. And corporations want to rein in an agency that many see as arbitrary and out of control.
This case involves the EPA's ability to issue an order that essentially deprives the property owner of the value of the property.
Attorney Rachel Brand co-authored a Friend of the Court brief for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, one of more than a dozen briefs filed in support of the couple from Idaho.
When the EPA issues an order against a business or an individual, the EPA really has the power. What we're arguing is that whether it's a corporation or a person, they should have their day in court.
But if every action can immediately go to court, enforcement can grind to a halt. That's what makes conservation groups nervous. Professor Robert Glicksman of the George Washington University School of Law in Washington, D.C., doesn't have any direct role in this case. But as an expert in environmental law, he's been following it closely. He says in this battle, Mike and Chantel Sackett are the obvious David to the EPA's Goliath. But as Glicksman sees it,
the precedent set in this case would allow the Goliath corporations to bring lawsuits just as it allows the Sacketts of the world to bring this lawsuit.
And that, in turn,
could have an impact upon the degree to which wetlands are protected, with important ecological implications.
When it comes to litigation strategy, casting counts. The Supreme Court passed on a similar case brought by corporate giant GE. Glicksman says the most compelling way to challenge a federal regulation
is to pick a sympathetic plaintiff, which would tend to be a small landowner as opposed to a multimillion-dollar corporation.
I.e., the Sacketts. Glicksman says when Congress authorizes agencies to enforce statutes administratively, it's with the idea that the agency has the expertise, not courts. For now, fines imposed by the EPA on the Sackett's continue to pile up. For that, we return to Jessica Robinson in the Idaho Panhandle.
Every day the Sackett's don't put the land back the way they found it, they accrue a $37,500 fine. If the EPA actually collects, the couple estimates the fines would add up to more than $44 million. Nonetheless, the Sackett's insist they believe in the EPA and laws that protect clean air and waterways. It's just this time, Chantel Sackett says, the agency has gone too far.
Eventually, you know, the right thing is going to happen here. There's going to be a house here.
In between the Sackett's land and their neighbors, a small stand of cattails recently appeared. It's a reminder that even if Mike and Chantel prevail in Sackett versus EPA, Their battle over whether their dream house is in a wetland still may not be over. I'm Jessica Robinson, reporting.
And from Washington, D.C., I'm Elizabeth Wynne Johnson, reporting.